I was saying I'm an extrovert, so I've got a real loud voice, and I'd be very comfortable without this thing, but it's probably better that I have it on. So anyway, thank you all so much for having me tonight. I've presented this talk to a lot of different churches and parenting groups, and some of them have been Christian and some of them have not been Christian, but it really... Well, and your community is really special. I mean, I walked up and felt welcomed right away, and that was really sweet. But I do really love to be among people who love the Lord, you know, and just want to make him the central fixture in their families as they're raising their families, which is, as we realize, as I'm realizing, it's the hardest job, but it's the most rewarding, but it's really takes the most intentional investment. And so anyway, I'm just so glad you're here. I've been a therapist for about 12 years, and like you said, at LifeGate since 2008. And on our forms at LifeGate, we have we invite clients to choose whether or not they want to integrate spiritual matters into their counseling. Right? You don't want to force that, right? You want, as a therapist, you know, we need to be inviting and like open to their exploration, right? But I love Jesus, and when they check the no box. So usually it's like a triple check on the no box if they don't want to incorporate their faith. And it really, you know, it just saddens me because psychology can only take us so far. And in my therapy and my work with clients, they get so much further if they're willing to engage the Holy Spirit in the process. So just really excited, more energized because you guys are there, you know, so I'm excited. So anyway... So, glad I can explicitly say Jesus in this group tonight. Anyway, so funny. So anyway, I wanted to talk to you tonight about a subject that I'm really passionate about, and it's the title, Courageously Combating Our Hurried Culture. Hurriedness, no matter, you know, how you want to fight it, hurriedness is really getting woven into the very fiber of our being as a culture, right? And our days fill up so quickly with activities and events and schedules and meetings to the point where I think we've actually become a little uncomfortable not being engaged in something all the time. And we practically look for ways to fill empty space. You know, we're just not comfortable with that anymore, I think. You think we'd because we're busy, we'd look for silence. We'd cherish moments that are quiet, but we don't. And I don't know if you're like me. A lot of this is going to be confession. You know, I hit the red light and I glance down at my phone. Right, it's right there next to me. Light turns red, so I'm not going to get a ticket. And I just look at my phone, and my mind is immediately transported to another place. Right, I can't just appreciate being in the car anymore without the kids in the back. You know, I can't even just be there. I'm looking, I see a text, there's a news feed, I'm bombarded. Oh, there's three, you know, there's the little three, the little red three. I've got three emails. I wonder who that's from. Did I get back? You know, anyway, we're just bombarded, right? So the other day a client shared with me, he's in his early 30s, he shared with me, he has two kids, a little baby and a three-year-old and a wife, and he said, honestly, he said, I feel really trapped because I feel like slowing down could cost me everything, and I have this family to take care of, but I also feel like I barely had time for my wife before my kids were born, and now I have three people in this house that need me more than just to provide, but they need me emotionally, but I'm scared to slow down. I'm scared that it'll cost me everything, cost them everything, and I looked at him, and I said, I get it. I get the fear. And I said, but what would not slowing down cost you? And he had to really wrestle with that. So whether we know it or not, the hurried way of living, whether it's rooted in fear, kind of like my client was expressing, I'm afraid to slow down, I'm afraid of what that will cost, or just a habit, like I was talking about, when you look at your phone, it's just a habit, just always being rushed, always being connected, always being bombarded with stuff. Whatever the reason, this hurried way of living causes us a tremendous amount of stress. And that stress that we feel as adults can really easily trickle down to our kids. So when they're young, right, really little, they're kind of along for the ride as we juggle all the demands of our day. One of my friends refers to kids 6 months and younger as luggage, right? They just come right along. But I think that we often forget that young kids, right, preschool kids, and I'm just going to speak to every age tonight, just so you know. So I just want to capture, I know you all have different age kids. So, you know, young kids are, they're natural slow pokes. You know this. How long does it take to put on Velcro shoes, people? We got to go. You know, but they're just natural slow pokes. They want to stop and smell the flowers. They're interested in the trickling stream. You know, they're just taking in the world, aren't they? It's sweet and so annoying when you got to get somewhere. So anyway, I just, if our day, though, as adults, is packed and we feel overstimulated, imagine what these little ones who, again, are, you know, they're slow, they're taking in the world. Imagine what they feel like when they feel our stress and our rush. So I remember one day about 3 weeks ago, I took the kids to the aquarium and we splashed in the Centennial Olympic Park, those fountains, and we even squeezed in a little picnic, and honestly, we had a blast. And but I remember asking my son, Robbie, who's five, I sat down, I said, oh, did you have fun? And tell me your favorite part of the aquarium. And we were chatting about it, eating our cheese sticks, and I said, hey, what should we do now? And he said, I just want to go to my house. And he said, maybe we could snuggle. And I was like, oh, I mean, first of all, that totally melted my heart. I mean, I will remember that moment forever. But it was also a really great reminder to me that, you know, I'm a working mom. I work 2 days. So even though I'm part-time, I struggle with this kind of mommy guilt, right? I want the days that I'm at home with my kids to count, right? We got to get the aquarium in. We got to have fun. We got to make family memories. You know, I really want those days to count, right? But that's my stuff. And that's when guilt, that mommy guilt or that self-doubt, when that starts to drive my decision-making, I don't always make the best choices. So the truth is, you know, no matter how much fun we're having and how stimulating or exciting things are, kids really need to just be in order to recharge. They need unstructured time in our presence just to feel safe, really, and calm. They just need that. And they need that to grow in relationship with us. And I know that every one of you is here tonight because that's what you want. So let me tell you a little bit of research that is compelling, and it's part of what I use to write this talk. So I know that everyone in here, or I trust, maybe that was presumptuous, I trust that everyone in here remembers a simpler, slower-paced childhood than what our kids are experiencing. And maybe every generation has said that, right? Maybe everybody says, oh, back in the day it was slower. I get that. But psychologists are suggesting that that in the past few decades, our culture has really actually been pushing more than ever before, pushing for children to polish their academic skills, their extracurricular skills, at much younger ages than ever before. So there is something real that's happening here. There is something that's faster paced and more pressured than what we experienced and what generations previously experienced. Now, David Elkind is the author of a book called The Hurried Child. So, shocker, I used that when I was writing this talk. And he argues that our culture is moving at a pace now that is sadly robbing our kids of the time they need just to be kids. Like I was talking about, that unstructured time that helps them to feel safe and explore. In his book, he notes research showing that kids today have less leisure time, you've probably heard about this, less family time, but more stress and more anxiety than in any generation prior. And he attributes this, at least in part, to this information age that we're living in, right? So, now, having access to the collective knowledge and wisdom of the whole world because of this information age, I mean, that has its benefits, right? And Elkind would agree with that. For instance, we've learned a lot more about children's brains in the last couple decades. We realize now that infants and young children are able to absorb knowledge at incredibly high rates. So we've deemed these years critical, right? We want to capitalize on their ability to learn and grow and develop. But this information can easily be distorted, can't it? So it can, and sometimes does, cause parents, like us, to feel pressure to get babies and toddlers involved in formal skill-building programs really early. And I want to give you an example of this. I was at the park when my son Robbie was about 6 months old, you know, and you just chat with moms at the park, and we're just pushing, we're pushing our kids on the swing, just chatting, and she said, you know, have you done the music class yet? And I was like, what is that? And she was like, wow, it has just been fantastic. Oh my gosh, I've really seen my son, you know, 5 months blossoming and stuff. And I was like, wow, okay. And I just remember at some point in the conversation starting to feel a little anxious. And as I look back, I realize that I felt anxious because she said something along the lines of, you know, they say the earlier you get them involved, the more, you know, talented and interested in music they'll be. So you really should think about signing up because he's already 6 months. I was like, ugh. You know, but see, the thing is, I'm a new parent, right? So you hear this stuff and you go, uh-oh, am I missing out on an opportunity? So I just say that because I want to admit to you and join with you and say that the pressure comes from all over. All of a sudden we can doubt just kind of our own instincts, like in the swing enough, just at 6 months, just our cuddle time, but it makes you doubt. So, and as you know, the opportunities for involvement, it only increases as the kids get older. All the activities, most families I know, and maybe you're among them, feel kind of overwhelmed by the sheer volume of programs and activities, and they all promise to give our kids that extra edge, right? That extra advantage. And there's so many of them, so which one do we even choose, right? So my kids, like I mentioned, Robbie's 5, Madeline is 3 and a half. So this summer, I was planning our calendar and thinking about just, you know, summer activities. And I thought, all right, well, let's see. You know, they're only 3 and 5, so I thought it was reasonable to sign them up for once a month. They would just do like a morning camp for a week, right? Vacation Bible school, maybe a little gymnastics camp. They're doing a little sports thing. I thought that's reasonable. Once a month, you know, in preschool, summer's like 4 months long. It's kind of crazy. But anyway, I was like, oh, we got to just have something. So once a month, they're doing that. And I thought that's good. But as I was, again, chatting with a neighbor the other day, I started to question my decision. And her sons, 6 and 4, so close to our kids' age, they're involved in much more structured activities this summer. They are in a soccer league, and they are in swim team. And I was like, oh, boy. So I just want to admit to you tonight that even though I am talking to you about courageously combating the hurried culture, I hurried myself right into the house that night, and I said to Steve, honey, do you think we should get Robbie signed up for soccer? And he was like, babe, he doesn't even like to kick a ball. What are you talking about? And I was like, well, but her six-year-old is, like, making goals and all this stuff, and I'm just saying, you just start to question. You want to do what's best for your kids. You want to give them the opportunities. So now, here's the deal. Here's what I'm not concluding, because I love my neighbor. I'm not concluding that she's overscheduled or doing the wrong thing. I'm also not concluding that, you know, my husband and I have just, we found the perfect balance, and we know the activities that are best. No, I'm not saying any of that. I would not say that. But I am saying that it's easy to get bombarded with all the options, and I'm also saying that it's super easy to get roped in to the comparison trap. It happens like this. So I'm sure that everyone here can relate to my moment of panic with Robbie, right, on some level. The truth is this. We all want what's best for our kids. And I believe that if we're honest with ourselves, though, the one question that just haunts us a little bit when we doubt our decisions like I did, the one question that's really looming is, am I doing what's best for my kids? Or even deeper, am I a good enough parent? So if you're here tonight, I know that you want what's best for your kids. That's why you're here. So let's just get that clear. And I also believe that deep down, you actually know what's best for them too. All your kids are individuals. You know what's best for them. And I believe that you know when your kids are thriving, and I believe you know that when they're getting a little too worn out. I believe you know that. You can see that. You can sense that. So what I am not here to do is tell you which activities and programs that are worthwhile and which activities you should axe. That is not why I'm here. But if you do find that every once in a while the pace you're keeping feels a little hectic, and you feel a little rushed in your spirit, what I would like to do for the rest of our time together is first reassure you with some truths that I hope will let you breathe a little bit easier. And second, I just want to equip you with a few practical strategies to unhurry your lives. That's it. So let's begin with some truth, huh?
All right.
So first, this is all on your thing if you want to follow. First truth of three, children's brains, as we discussed, they are at a high capacity for learning, but they are also at a high capacity for burnout. So yeah, our children have a high capacity for learning. In fact, by the time they hit 25, they've surpassed that peak opportunity, but they are also at a high capacity for overload. And burnout, if they're overstimulated or pushed too far. The truth is, and this is encouraging to me, I hope it is to you, kids are the most receptive to learning and absorbing all the information that we want them to be able to absorb within the context of a loving, connected relationship with their parents. They're the most receptive to all the stuff we want to pack into those spongy brains of theirs within the context of connection with y'all. And research shows, and I love this too, that spending unstructured, there's that word again, quality time with mom and dad is actually a better predictor of future success, wow, than the most elite education programs. So let me just repeat that in a different way. Quality time with you is more impactful than any development opportunity this great city has to offer. That's great. Now, get them involved in what seems right, okay? I'm not saying we need to go live, you know, away from opportunities. I'm just saying keep that in mind. You and your connection to them will allow those roots to grow and blossom, and their success will be even better because of you. Second truth. This is like, well, anyway, impactful for me. Future success does not hinge on our children being jacks of all trades. Okay? I don't know when this happened, but was not happening in the 80s or the 70s or the 60s. Listen, okay, so Edward Hollowell is another author. He wrote the book Childhood Roots of Adult Happiness. That's on your page too if you're interested in it. And it talks about how unfair it is that adolescents are expected to excel in so many areas these days. Think about it. As adults, we have to be good at one or two things. I mean, you're an accountant, great. Flight attendant, fabulous. Teacher, fantastic. Atlanta Brave, that's pretty cool. But there's no need to be a surgeon who's an author and a teacher and a professional athlete. That doesn't happen, and there's no need for that. And none of us even feel pressure around that. But in adolescence, it's considered a sign of well-roundedness, right, to be good at everything, or at least a lot of things. And if you're not, you might not stand out on those college applications, right? So there's pressure. So again, it's one thing to expose our kids, like y'all do, I'm sure, to a variety of activities just to see what they're interested in, to see where they excel. You want to do that, of course. But the pressure kids feel to be proficient in multiple areas can be really daunting for them. I used to see adolescent clients, and a lot of them would say, you know, I mean, they're coming in for therapy, so they'd say something like, you know, I'm feeling kind of anxious or depressed or having trouble with my parents or whatever. But when I would ask them about their lives, I realized pretty quickly that the pace they were maintaining, it would make it hard not to feel anxious or depressed or discouraged. One of my clients is a true story. She would come straight from soccer practice to therapy, then head to Kuman, that math tutoring. Then she'd hork down a Chick-fil-A sandwich on her way to a violin lesson, and then arrive home at 8 p.m. to have 3 more hours of homework. And she could hardly breathe, obviously. But you know what's so strange about her? And actually, she's not alone. She never reported that she was unhappy doing any of the activities she was doing, except for math tutoring. She did not like that. But she didn't say she was unhappy with any of the things she was doing, just that she was feeling anxious and didn't know why. So it's almost as though she had never known anything different. She'd always been busy, always been in a hurry. So here's what I started to conclude a few years back. Perhaps once our lives become hurried, especially our kids, we don't even recognize the potential consequences. Don't even see it. Maybe we feel something, but we don't put it together, and our kids certainly don't. So, third truth, rest helps our development more than rush. Now, let me read to you from a familiar, very familiar text. And it's the Message version. I don't know how y'all feel about that, but this particular one, I just liked the Message version better, so it's not that, okay, good, all right. Okay. Y'all love Jesus, but I'm not sure how you feel about the Message version. So, okay. So it's the Message version of the Mary Martha story. We're familiar. It's Luke 10, 38 through 42. As they continued on their travel, Jesus entered a village. A woman by the name of Martha welcomed him and made him feel quite at home. And she had a sister, Mary, who sat before the master, just hanging on every word he said. But Martha, she was pulled away by all she had to do in the kitchen. Later, she stepped in, interrupting them. Master, don't you care that my sister has abandoned the kitchen to me? Tell her to lend me a hand. And Jesus said to her, I feel like he kind of put his hand on her shoulder. Martha, dear Martha, you are fussing far too much. Only one thing is essential, and Mary has chosen it. It's the main course. I love that. And it won't be taken from her. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, and I have young ones, so I'm still learning a lot, but being a parent has really changed me in so many ways, but one of the things it's really done for me is help me understand the heart of God a little bit better. I love my kids. I would do anything for them. But what do I want most from them? Just to be with them. I don't need them to recite their ABCs perfectly. I mean, I love to watch them learn, but that's not my top concern. It's fun to see Robbie be able to catch a ball every once in a while or master a new skill, but his talents are not the light of my life. The most precious part of my relationship with Robbie and Maddie is when one of them stops whatever they're doing, just crawls into my lap for a second, lays their head on my shoulder or something, and just says, love you, Mommy, right? So there are so many good things that we prioritize in our lives, but when good ones take precedence over the best one, like Jesus was talking about, our relationship with him, their relationship with him, their relationship with us, our lives are instantly deprioritized. So let me say that again. We are doing good things for our kids. But when good gets in front of best, there's an imbalance. And sometimes I feel like Jesus is whispering to my heart, Katie, that can be done later. You're rematching socks. Come sit with me. You know, like, let's spend a little time together. Now, if these truths kind of resonate with you, it's because that's how the Lord designed us. This is not from me. He designed us to live not as rushed people, but as restful people. So what keeps us from living that way? Well, I'm going to hold this up. Piece of paper. Pretty familiar looking. What you might have not really paid attention to are the margins on the paper. You may have heard of this concept. Bear with me if you've heard of it, because I think it's still a good refresher. There are margins on this paper, margins in a book, margins on an email, memo. Everything that has written word has some kind of margin. And these nice, clean margins with nothing but white space are pretty important because they serve as a boundary for what is written between them. We can easily take that boundary for granted because we're just used to seeing it. But imagine just for a moment trying to read a book or a memo from your boss or just a letter from a friend with no margins, just words tumbling from left to right, falling off the edge of the pages. It gives you a headache just thinking about that. That would be exhausting. It would be stressful. Whoever came up with the idea to have margin was a pretty smart person, because that person recognized that even though more good information could be crammed onto a page devoid of margin, which I know we all tried to do in college, I did that too, but anyway, more information could be crammed onto a page with no margin, it would not be optimal for the person trying to read those words. You see, we can only understand and internalize the written word when a sufficient margin is kept. And the same, of course, holds true for our lives. We can only grow and develop into who God created us to be when we keep the right margins. Now, about a year ago, as you all know, Truett Cathy passed away, and I was at his memorial service, and a lot of amazing things were said about him, but of course, one of the things that was reflected upon was the fact that when he started Chick-fil-A, he decided to keep it closed on Sunday. You know this. And he got so much flack for that. You know, Wall Street was like, that's a terrible idea. His investors were like, no, it's a weekend day. That's a prime time for fast food. People are going to be traveling back and forth. You cannot be closed on Sunday. And he didn't even blink. He was like, oh, yes, I can. First of all, it's his company. Secondly, yes, I can, and yes, I will. And it is very important in this culture that we preserve that margin, because I know that my people will thrive because of it. That's how God intended us to live, and I am not going to mess that up. So it's just really cool that he didn't even consider doing something different. So if living this non-hurried, margined life sounds compelling to you, you might be wondering, okay, Katie, but other than just saying no to everything, how do I combat hurriedness in practical ways in our lives? Well, first of all, I don't want you to think that I'm telling you to say no to everything. I'm not suggesting that. What I am suggesting, here's my other risky little move, is that when you say yes to something, just make sure it's a heck yes. Okay? That's all. And make sure that the heck yes is in line with your values and what you feel like the Lord is actually calling you and your family to do. And your heck yes might be different from your neighbor's heck yes or your friend's heck yes. And I just hope that you anchor yourself and decide, you know what, that's all right. I'm not going to let that blow me off course. So there are three things that I will believe will help you in your quest to combat hurriedness, three practical things. And I want you to think of them kind of like antidotes to hurriedness. An antidote, by definition, is something that counteracts an unpleasant feeling or situation. That's all it is. So the three most effective antidotes that I know for hurriedness are what I call the three R's. Simple. Relationships, recreation, and rest. And these are also written for you. Here's the catch. Those three things cannot exist, might as well not even try, if you don't have the margin for them. Those three R's exist only in the margin. So let's talk about the first one just for a minute. Let's talk about relationships. Now, as far as the Lord is concerned, the most important relationship, some of the sweetest times I have had with the Lord, and I'm sure you can relate to this, have been those times where I have had no agenda but to just sit at his feet like Mary, right? Those have been the sweetest times. It's been in those moments where I've been the most filled up. I feel like the Lord has spoken to me the most clearly. As a mom, as a wife, as a therapist, those have been the times. Psalm 46:10, that's one of my favorite scriptures in the whole Bible, and you know it. It says, be still, and know that I am God. Now, I've always loved that verse, but I love this. I learned recently that in the Hebrew, the words be still actually translate as cease striving. Cease striving. Isn't that more profound than be still? I mean, I love be still, but cease striving is like, whoa, that's like an active, let it go, put it down. You know, so I just was blown away by that. Cease striving and trust me is what he is saying. If only we could live out that challenge every day. I mean, how would our priorities and schedules shift? How would our relationships change? I don't know about you, but when I finally have time dedicated just to being with my husband and my kids, it is like stepping off a moving sidewalk at the airport. Right? I mean, it's a whoa, big change. It feels weird. It feels weird not to be moving so quickly. It feels odd that I'm not tending to a to-do list. I feel like I should be doing something more, right? And often my mind is still kind of racing about the loose ends that I still think I need to get to. So when I do that, right? But when I do that, when I stay on the periphery, I sell myself and my family short of experiencing my genuine presence. So, because I want to be more present with my family, I must be really intentional to shift gears. So I have to leave, this is just what I have to do. I have to leave my phone plugged in on the desk. When I walk through the laundry room, I get to like a little desk thing, I leave my phone plugged in and I keep moving, right? I don't want to hear a buzz, I don't want to see a little light, I can't. I mean, maybe I just don't have, what's that word? I can't, fight it or whatever, but yeah, willpower, yes, that's it, okay. So, but anyway, I have to leave my phone plugged in there. I have to get down on the floor with my kids at their level to be able to really like engage with them and be at their pace. That helps me too. And I have to sift through the mail that's on the counter later. Why do I do that? Sift through it later so I can just look at Steve. And I love that guy. We've been married for 12 years in a week. I love him. I don't even not like being with him. I actually like being with him, and I still find that I distract myself with stuff. So I just have to say, mail later, you like that guy, why don't you talk to him about your day, Jeez. So anyway, so sometimes 15 minutes of my undivided attention, it's so much more valuable than if I gave my family an hour of my physical presence, my body, my physical presence, but my mind was somewhere else. So think about it that way. Just 15 minutes of you being on the floor, eye to eye, face to face, voice to voice, that's going to be better than an hour where you're not. So this doesn't take 3-5 hours, That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying, well, you got to put everything, got to quit your job, you got to move to a farm. I'm not saying that. Just saying, be intentional. And this is kind of cool research. I love this. I was reading this to my husband last night, and he said, really? That's cool. So research suggests that the first 15 to 30 minutes after a parent and a child or a husband and a wife come back together after a period of separation, those count the most for reconnecting and growing in relationship. So just think about, and I don't know how that works for you, whether you do carpool or pickup or what, just keep that somewhere. Put that on a shelf somewhere in your head. Just 15 to 30 minutes after you've been apart. Not for a long time. I'm not talking about after vacation. I'm talking about just on a day-to-day basis. You've been apart, back together. Those first 15 to 30 minutes, they count the most. So that's so great. Anyway, another way that we can ensure that our relationships are prioritized is to create what I call meaningful, sacred family rituals. Now, these are just the routines and activities that are unique to your family. I love the word sacred because it suggests that they're honored, that they're protected, that they're revered, they're sacred, right? They're special to you. Now, in our family, in this season of life, we have three. We have morning prayer at the breakfast table. We have snuggle and snack time after nap, my favorite. I'm a big snuggler. I just really like snuggling. and story time and reflections before bed. Just those are our sacred family rituals. We always do them. Again, not to be legalistic, sometimes we don't. I'm just saying we really protect them with everything in our power. We keep them sacred, right? But I'm not perfect. So just to make that clear. Now the third one, that story time and reflection and prayer before bed, that's actually my favorite. Because when I was pregnant with Robbie, my friends demanded that I sign up for this sort of cultish thing called Moms on Call. Has anybody heard here about Moms on Call? Oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I like it when at least one person raises a hand because I'm like, good, okay, we were together in this. But anyway, okay, so here's the deal. So this woman, Laura Hunter, is a infant care nurse, and she also has five of her own children. She loves the Lord, and she has five children, a set of twins among them. And so because of her experience and her passion, she just actually started this business, realizing that a lot of moms, well, like me, don't have their family, their moms with them always. You know, we live all over the country, the world these days. So she just wanted to come alongside moms in those first early months and just help them. Just kind of, so she comes to your house for 2 hours and she just kind of shows you the ropes. And then you have access to email with her if you have a question. And it was just really, for me, not having my mom around really physically present, and I had a gazillion questions as a new mom. It was just so nice to have her that I trusted, you know, sort of on call, right? So anyway, but I remember she came to our house, like I said, for 2 hours. That first week Robbie was born, and she encouraged us to start building habits early that would facilitate connection with our kids. I mean, at that point, you're just trying to get your kid to sleep through the night, right? But I mean, she was just really intentional about, like, even now, like, even in the first week, build rituals, build habits that'll facilitate connection. So I just thought that was really sweet. And she told us that children's hearts are the most open, the most receptive during what she calls wake and sleep. And so what she means by that is just, you know, when you're waking up, when you're going to sleep, that's when children's hearts are the most open. And so things are calmer then, right, between wake and sleep. There's less distractions. It's quieter. So they're more apt to connect with us without distraction. So we decided from the time our kids were babies, I mean really from the time Robbie was a week old, that we would utilize those times to just read with them, to talk with them, to pray together. And now we talk about more important meaty stuff like their character, the highs and lows of their day, what they did that day that we were really proud of, maybe what happened that day that wasn't in line with our family values. And then now that they're older, we give them also an opportunity to share their thoughts and feelings with us during that time. So it's interesting because our kids notice when one of our sacred family rituals has been foregone. So for instance, if we, for some reason, forget to say our prayer at breakfast, Maddie will fold her little hands and she'll say, okay, I say prayer. Like, she just announces, like, well, if you're not doing it, like, I'm handling this, right? It's so cute. Okay, I say the prayer. And then at night, if bedtime gets too rushed, you know, Robbie will actually tear up. And he'll say these words that also melt my heart. He'll say, but aren't we going to chat? Of course we're going to chat, honey. It's fine. But it's just so sweet. See, they mean something to them. They're used to them being there, and it helps. So because our kids are young, of course, Steve and I have decided what our sacred family rituals will be. But as our kids grow up, we will want to start getting their feedback about what's special to them and what they would like to see being sacred, right? And so I encourage you to do the same with your kids. It doesn't have to stay the same or be rigid. All you want is for something to be sacred that brings you back together. Okay, you guys are hanging with me, man. I'm very verbal. Okay, the last two R's. Oh, we're almost there. Okay. The recreation is one of my favorites. And as a family, as you know, it's really important that we have fun together, and it's fun. When couples or families come in to see me, the first question I ask them is something along the lines of, if it's a couple, I'll say, so tell me, what initially drew you to each other? You know, what just captivated your heart about that guy, that girl, right? Or if it's a family, I'll say, tell me about the last time you had fun together. When was that? And about a year ago, I saw a 17-year-old girl. She was really depressed. And her parents brought her to see me because she'd been drinking a lot and her grades were slipping and they just felt like a constant tension in their relationship with her. So about a month into our work together, I decided to do a family session because she shared some stuff with me and it was time for the family to meet. And they were shocked and frankly relieved when she actually shared that she missed spending time with them. And they thought, are you kidding? We thought you wanted nothing to do with us. Of course. Turns out it was quite the opposite. She said this, it's just that our house feels so tense right now. She said, nobody talks. There's this negative energy. We don't do anything fun together anymore. And I guess part of me just wanted to escape that stress, so I found some outlets for it. That's what she said. So this family had gone through some hard times a couple years before I had seen them. But instead of dealing with those things, which is hard, they just distracted themselves with activities and busyness that kept them away from each other. Pretty common, right? It hurts too much. I don't want to feel it. I don't want to think about it. Being here makes me think about it, right? I mean, we get away from pain, especially emotional pain. So consequently, they all started going their separate ways. They didn't engage in the things that used to keep them close. And for their family, that was, I remember it well, game nights, movie night, and travel. They liked to travel together. So no matter how old your kids are, I just encourage you to just make sure you carve out time to make memories together. They don't have to be expensive memories. We love the duck pond, okay? They just carve out time to make memories and have fun. on Saturday, our son Robbie wakes up and screams, yikes. It's like, whoa, it's Saturday. He's like, pancake day! And he just like runs downstairs so excited. So we bake pancakes, and then we do a little activity like I was talking about. Often it's going to the duck pond, or we go over to Chastain Park and pet the horses because Maddie loves horses. Just, that's it. Nothing fancy. Just, again, kind of a sacred ritual, but intentionally to like make memories, you know, to have fun. So, research has shown us that when we laugh together, a hormone called oxytocin actually gets released in our brains. You may know about this. It's often nicknamed the love hormone. And it's the same hormone that gets released between a mother and daughter during breastfeeding and between a couple when they're physically intimate. That's the same hormone, and it gets released when we laugh together, and it bonds us. It's often called the love hormone. It's sometimes called the bonding hormone, and it literally bonds us. So my son, I used to show this video like unashamed, but I didn't bring it tonight. But he has the best laugh, but from the time he was a baby, it was more like an explosion. Like his laughter was like an explosion. It was kind of weird. People would be like, whoa, what just happened? But he just like had a lot of delight and it just like flew out of him. And as you can expect, you know, he's 5 now, he still loves to laugh and he really wants to make his family laugh. We laugh a while. And his sister Maddie loves him. And on the weekends, they get to have what we call sleepovers, which is really just they get to sleep in the same room. And they think it's super fun. I mean, no, not even sleeping bags, just like they're in the same room and that's cool. So at this point in their lives. But anyway, it is just Steve and I reflect that even though they fall asleep later and we're like, go to bed, you know, but if we just do reflect that it's so sweet to hear their giggles. And then hear the shh, you know, because they don't want to get us up or whatever. We're always like, go to bed. But anyway, it's still very sweet that they love to laugh together, and we love that. So last but not least, rest. Rest is a huge antidote to hurriedness. I'm sure you're not surprised. And I am not talking about collapsing into bed for that coveted 7 to 8 hours of sleep, although that is lovely. I am talking about, like, on the seventh day he rested kind of rest, okay? Do you realize that God gave us a gift when he commanded us to keep the Sabbath? I'm not legalistic, I'm not, but I do find it incredible that our God tells us, rest. Please rest. It's what you need. Why? We do the same thing with our kids. We know when they're getting a little cranky, they need to rest. Sometimes they're hangry and they need to eat, but you know, we know they need to nap, especially the little ones. Like, you need to rest, honey. You need a nap, right? We know better. We know better. They fight it. We know it. We know you're not designed to operate this way, honey. We all know this is going to end badly in tears. And this rest, please, love, rest, right? Now, as adults, we don't necessarily need to nap, right? Although I love to nap, just so you know. On Saturdays, I get a little cranky if I don't get a nap. And I recently, do you? Oh, thank you. I mean, I'm 36, but I still love my naps. And recently, just so you know, I found out that Ronald Reagan napped every day of his life. And so just in case you're going to feel a little judgy about me napping, I just want you to know that the President of the United States napped. So I feel okay about it. I love my naps, but truly, but honestly, we need to take this rest idea, this spiritual rest idea to heart if we want to combat hurriedness. Matthew 11:28, it's on my screensaver, because I need to read it all the time. It says, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. See, there's physical rest and there's spiritual rest. When we are connected with the Lord, we can be at rest in our spirits even when our world is crazy and our lives are stressed. When we find time to be still and rest in the Lord, we are telling our minds and our to-do lists to take a break. It is only when we create that kind of margin that God actually has the opportunity to speak to our hearts, to remind us he's in control. We don't have to overthink or overplan every little step. I trust that you've felt this kind of peaceful, surrendered rest at some point in your lives, even if it's been a while. I trust that you've experienced that. So as we conclude, I just want to remind you that I do not have it all together. I struggle with this. I hope you know that, and I hope you felt that as I shared. But our souls crave to being unhurried. Our kids crave for us to show them how to live unhurried, even if they can't articulate it. So remember what Jesus said to Martha, one thing is essential, and Mary has chosen it. So maybe if we can trust that, really lean into that, we could live more abundant lives that's promised. And I'm pretty sure that those lives not hurried, intentional, would be very attractive to those around us. So we might not be able to change the entire culture, but the culture of our families, those can be impacted. So that's all I have for you. And I really appreciate y'all coming out tonight.